today. I don't need to say it to the other two guys. They wake up fresh because they know.
I feel like everybody in that Royals locker room last night got laid.
Welcome to the show. What a vibe that was. You walk in, they're playing Return of the Mac.
Oh, my God. They beat the Pirates.
They kicked their ass, man. That was a good win last night. That's the best home win we've seen all year.
Heck yeah.
So I'll take it. That was a hell of a game last night. Vibes were good. Nobody was down. Vinny was fantastic. What a game. But what a Tuesday. 69 degrees this morning, too. Can't make it up.
Yeah, baby.
You can't make it up,
Let's
man.
Go.
I just want to win, Jim.
That's right.
Yeah. So was that the first game all year that you guys turned on and went, all right, they got this one. It's 7-2.
It's 7-2 is when I turned it off. Yeah, about the fourth inning. We're like, all right, we've seen enough here. It's time for, let's go watch an episode of Wings and hammer the night away. And so that's kind of what we did last night. Yeah, it could be. I mean, Monday, Tuesday. Hey, Jen's on summer break now. All the days blend together. So, You know, it doesn't matter. So she's got 3 weeks off to kind of reset. I'd love it. I think everybody in the world should have that opportunity. And that's something that this country should provide to everybody, is having a long time off every year to kind of reset your batteries. I mean, I think it's great that she has the opportunity to do that. And I think more and more, you know, companies, and quite honestly, it should be federal law that every year, you know, we shut it down. Everybody gets a mandatory 3 week vacation to kind of, you know, refresh their batteries. I guarantee you, if you did that for people, you know how much more productive people would be at work if you gave them 3 weeks off just to kind of, you know, recharge and reflect and rejuvenate themselves.
How'd
would be outstanding. 1 week is like a tease. You'll realize that when you get back, you'll be like, oh man, 1 week, you just, cause you finally get in that vacation mode. And then when you get in that vacation mode, you're like, I'm out of that vacation mode, cause now I've got to go back to work. And so, you know, last year when we did the 2 week trip, that was good. That was good unwinding. But I still think 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you know, give everybody a little bit of a sabbatical.
Damn, a whole month.
but it pays off, man. I mean, you know, people will work harder. They will work better. They will be better at their job. I mean, you see it all the time in whatever industry you walk in, how many people are just slugging into work every single day. And it's like, I don't want to be here. Give everybody a month off, mandatory. You know, not everybody takes it at the same time or anything like that, so you can keep companies up and running. But to give people that opportunity to have that time off to rejuvenate their batteries, I don't see anything wrong with that whatsoever. And I think it should be federal law. So there you go. That's Bob Fesco's take of the day. Federal law, month off for everybody.
Well, maybe you can do the Lord's work because you'll talk to a politician today
on the Kansas side. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, we're doing Ty Masterson, the head of the Kansas Senate. The president of the Kansas Senate will join us at 8:20 today. They reached out to us. I wonder what they want to talk about today. So we'll find
out. America.
Yeah.
You tee him up, I'll hit him.
Is he coming in today?
All it takes is a text or a strawberry pie.
Hello, America.
Hello.
I hope he's doing better after that fall he took.
He's fine. Yeah. He just spent 10 days in Italy. He's doing great.
According to you, he needs 14 more.
He does, absolutely. But he's retired. He's got that opportunity.
There's different pools here.
Well, he's not working. He's off.
But he'll tell you, I'm always working.
Oh, he's always, he's always grinding at it, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Emmanuel Acho could use a month or a year off.
Emmanuel Acho should probably use the rest of time off. Has he ever had a relevant take that meant anything important about anything, or does he just fire stupid takes that are just ignorant? Like yesterday must have been the day of ignorance, right? And Emmanuel Acho was the leader in the clubhouse on the ignorance take yesterday. Everything he says is ignorant. I've never looked at a take that Emmanuel Acho has said and went, yeah, I totally get that. It's always some just stupid comment about Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and all that stuff. I guess when you don't really have a platform, saying asinine, irrelevant, dumb stuff is the only way people are going to notice you. And that was Emmanuel Acho yesterday again.
Mm. Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later as well. I thought last night was a good day for the Royals. I thought they had a good night. I mean, Lofton smacked one. They had what does Vern always say to everybody? This team goes with Vinny, Sally, and Bobby.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Pittsburgh's bad, but that team has not looked good at home. That team has not hit home runs at home. That team hit 4 home runs last night at home. That team is 5-2 in the month of July. But again, like this is, again, a deep hill that they got to climb. Yeah. I know that doesn't make sense. It seems like an oxymoron, but I mean, they dug themselves into a hole in June, mm-hmm. and they've got to go out there and win again tonight. And I think they have to. I think they have to win again tomorrow. That way, you give yourself some sort of leeway when the Mets come in town. And then if you take 2 out of 3 against the Mets and you finish the home series 5-1, going to the All-Star game. Back to your theory, getting some time off, getting your head clear, doing all that sort of stuff. Maybe that pays off and they just get to bank on this, because to me, last night was the best they've looked at home. And it's hard to say that, you know, there's another game out there, but I mean, you hit 4 home runs, you scored 8 or 9 runs, you beat the smithereens out of the Pittsburgh Pirates. You said, "Eh, we're not going to pitch Paul Skeens." By the way, I got to watch that guy. What a man. What a statue. It's biggest guy on the field.
Oh, specimen. Is he really? Is he like Judgian type size?
O'Neill Cruz is tall
and
big. He didn't play last night because Noah Cameron's left-handed. Cruz apparently doesn't hit lefties. Nerd.
Get your ass in the batter's box, bro.
So Skeens was out there. It was weird because they were all wearing like their, you know, black warm-up shirts, and Skeens was just like in a yellow shirt. And Kramer out there.
Oh, because you can't hit him because he's the quarterback. Right,
and can't talk to him on days that they pitch.
Right.
And so we're out there, and he's like throwing a baseball against a net, just kind of like looking the field. I guess he's like really into like grounds crew. So they were like saying like Paul Skeens, like how Mike Trout loves weather.
Yeah.
Paul Skeens respects ground crews. Good. So he'll go around, look at the field. So, you know, Kramer and I are out there do some content for our social media on the Fan 96.5 on Instagram. Look for that later today and later this week. But no, it's good game last night, man. That's all there is to it. But you
I
gotta
love
have
that Salvi's hitting home runs again too. Like that warms my heart.
He's
man.
Hitting the hell out of the ball.
Like thank God. And there were so many people that wanted to run that guy out of town, you know. And it's like, oh my God, we got to get rid of Salvi. Oh, he's washed. Hey, put him in the same category as Travis Kelce. Hey, Salvi's washed. And Salvi's just going out there and mashing home runs now. And you know there are certain things, you know, when a season goes the way you don't want it to go, like it is for the Royals right now. You've got to find ways to kind of keep it positive and keep it exciting and keep you coming back for more. And Salvi's that reason. What did he need? 28 home runs at the beginning of the year to get 300, right?
Somewhere around
28 home runs or something like that. What's he at now? I mean, he's closing that gap to get closer and closer to that 28. He's in double digits, obviously, of where he is in home runs. And I think I saw something. Was he at 50-some RBIs now already this season? Like, Salvi's numbers, 52 home runs. That'd be outstanding.
Look out, Bonds.
So 52 driven in and 11 home runs right now. So he's what, 17 home runs away, 16 home runs away from hitting 300. Mm-hmm. That's very doable in the second half of the season, especially with the way that the weather is right now. It's hot. The ball's flying out of the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And so that is something to watch and something to kind of keep an eye on, because if Salvi gets that 300th home run this year, mm-hmm. he's a lock for the Hall of Fame. He's a lock for Cooperstown to get that 300th, you know, home run. Now, if he gets it next year, he's still a lock to get it next year. But that 300th home run as a catcher is a big deal, because not a lot of catchers hit 300 home runs. And so if the team isn't winning and not doing, you know, what we want in the standings, hey, Salvi's still out there to pay attention to. And the closer he gets to that 300 mark, the more important these games are going to be and the more impressive it's going to be to go out there and watch him to kind of start to deal with a little bit of that pressure, because that's a big number. That's a big deal for Salvador Perez. And then he will assert himself as, I believe, the second greatest Kansas City Royal of all time. And once he gets into the Hall of Fame and wears that Royals cap, everybody's going to be happy. He's going to be one of the greatest Hall of Fame inductions we've ever seen, because who Salvi is as a person. But that's something important to watch, man. I hope he gets those 300 home runs this year, and we don't have to worry about that going into what could be his final season in Kansas City, and then we get the opportunity to truly celebrate him next year.
Yeah, he currently ranks 8th on the list all time of home runs by a catcher at, I guess he has 300. It says he's, I guess it's playoffs and counting. So,
yeah.
Guys above him, Gary Carter, Pudge, Yogi, Johnny, Fisk, Piazza.
All Hall of Famers.
Yeah. And then Lance Parrish is there as well. Plus the other milestone Salvador Perez too is close to his 1,000 RBI.
Right, exactly.
He only needs 32 more for those.
Yep.
So you'll see 2 milestones this year from Salvador Perez.
Hopefully we do. Which one do you think happens first?
It's both.
right.
What if it's like 300 home run is a 3-run shot, I mean, and he has a 997 RBI?
$20 free bet. Which one are you putting it on RBI. First? RBIs. Yeah, what, for are you, sure. what are you doing?
For sure, it's RBIs.
It is. Okay.
I mean,
so,
just mathematically, it's not even close.
So he's 30-some RBIs away, roughly.
32. He's already got 50-something,
yeah.
so that means he's over halfway. He's under halfway as far as the home runs would go, because he's got 11. He needs 17 or 16 more, you said. So just mathematically, I'm thinking, okay, RBIs.
The other thing, though, with RBIs that you factor in is people getting on base in front of him and giving giving him those opportunities, right? Like you
when
can
you're hitting fifth.
Yeah, but you hope people get on base and whatnot. So quote unquote, you can control the home run more than you can control the RBI, if you will, and you really can't control the home run, but you're not relying on anybody else to do their job in order for you to do your job. And so if Salvi goes up there and hits the solo home run after solo home run, then that may close the gap, you know, sooner rather than later. But 52 RBIs, man, I think that's a big number for a team that's not scoring runs and a player that, you know, certain individuals said was washed. 52 RBIs at the midway point, that guy's on pace for about 100 RBIs. And if he hits 22 home runs and drives in 100, that ain't washed, my friends. That is far from being washed, especially at the catcher position. Those are huge numbers.
Yeah, he is. Let's see here. He is second all time on the list for Royals. George hit 317. Sal has 284 right now.
Yeah.
So plays again next year with the Royals. He's going to be the all time home run.
You want to see him break George's record?
Why not?
Yeah, cool. Right. No, yeah, absolutely. I think George would want it broken. I guarantee you, he would say, "Yeah, go ahead and break it." He was happy when 15 won, so he didn't have to talk about, you know, being the old guy winning the World Series anymore. You know?
I do think that. I mean, I love George, fan of the show and fan of his as well. I think that it's time to, you know, eventually, like, you have to get past George.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, eventually, you have to get past Lynn Dawson and all these great for the Chiefs. You have to move on from that. Like, who'd have thought that we'd be sitting here today saying Chris Jones is better than Neil Smith ever was, right? Like, and I know Neil Smith's the Chiefs legend. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's okay to have that historic, you know, artifacts and records.
Yeah.
But at some point, you want to see somebody else do it because you don't want to be that franchise where it's like, when you think of the Kansas City Royals, who do you think about? George Brett.
Right.
It's 2025.
Right. Like, George went into the Hall of Fame 26 years ago.
That's right.
You know, so he retired 31 years ago, right?
Right.
And he's still by far the greatest player in franchise history. And look, that's how good George was. He's arguably one of the top five baseball players in the history of the game. But it's also a very big indictment on this organization not being able to figure things out for 40 years. And now we've got our guy in Salvador Perez. And I think also Zach Greinke, too, will go into the Hall of Fame wearing a Royals cap. And I think that's important as well. If those two guys can go in, both wearing that KC on the cap, it gives us a little breathing room of going, well, the only Royal is George in the Hall of Fame.
No doubt. Coming up, next man up doesn't always mean a good thing. We'll explain on the other side here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
What's up, Kansas City? This is Jonathan India here, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Tuesday here on 96.5 The Fan, Dusty Likas, Bob Fesco, Mac Morey, all with you in attendance the entire week. And then next week.
No, I'm off next Friday.
That's right.
And then you're off the following week.
Yeah.
And then it's football season.
And then we're here.
And then we're here for the duration of the football season, which is getting closer and closer. What are we, 3 weeks away from today, right?
Yeah,
baby. 3 weeks away from football practice.
Or 2 weeks today.
2 weeks from
today.
2 weeks
from today.
Yeah. 2 weeks
That's right.
Today.
2 weeks.
2 weeks from today. 3 weeks from Thursday for the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And who says the summer stalls?
I mean, it doesn't. July is a very busy month. Think if you're a Major League Baseball executive right now. You've got the draft you're getting ready for and the trade deadline. Ooh, who the hell scheduled this stuff together? Imagine the NFL going through
that's
that,
insane.
Right? And I understand, look, it's the All-Star break, and you wanted to hype up the All-Star break and have the draft during the kind of the All-Star break, and it's a great move for baseball to kind of connect with the fans and whatnot. But all these people, like J.J. Piccolo spoke yesterday. For God's sakes, J.J., stop talking to us. You got a lot going on, bro. Seriously, it's like the trade deadline, the draft, and all this stuff is hitting all at one time in Major League Baseball. Imagine being like a front office executive right now, right, and going, the hell are we supposed to focus on trades? Are we supposed to focus on the draft? I mean, there's a lot going on right now. The good news is about the draft, though, it's so much less than it used to be back in years past. And so they don't have to prepare for 100
less
rounds.
Picks, you mean?
God, by a landslide, they cut that thing off.
Yeah, so your July checklist is still MLB draft, Home Run Derby, All-Star Game, Training Camp, and Trade Deadline.
Right, and you didn't even mention NBA free agency kicking off at the beginning of July, too. I mean, no, that's a big deal, man. Yeah. It's gossip. Yeah. It's craziness. It's exciting.
It's the best part of the NBA season. Like,
it is.
It's when a lot of people think NBA's at its best.
So. I saw a tweet yesterday, and it said, every move every NBA team has made so far this offseason, and every single team has made at least one move already this offseason, and we're in the eighth day of the offseason, like baseball. That's what you need to turn your offseason into, where the first week of that offseason, man, is a blitz, just like the NFL does for 3 days, right?
Yeah.
It's a blitz
it's
for
awesome.
3 days. Baseball needs to get to that level.
By the way, your 44 and 48 Royals are second place in the AL Central.
How bad is that division? I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later on, but that division we thought was going to be great.
Second place Royals, baby. Just take it for what it's worth. That's what you are, the second place
Royals.
I do want to get into something about a guy that I have glazed for the last 6 months. That is Jack Caglio. I know that I'm hard.
For sure.
And I'm, again, this isn't me, you know, saying that it's panic time. It's not me saying that it's, you know, sending down time. But I am at a point where I think he needs the one-on-one conversation with Q. And what I mean by this is not me telling Q how to do his job, which we can get into managers here in a little bit. But I think this is one of those things where you have the almost similar to the father-son conversation or, you know, just call what it is, coach-to-athlete conversation. And just be like, hey, look, man, like, you're not going down. You're not getting sent down. We brought you up. We believe in you. And we know this can turn. And, you know, the similarity that's stupid that I'm going to bring up is like 1 year you can have a really good summer in golf and the next summer you're like, you know what? I'm going to try to start hitting a draw or I'm going to start trying to hit a cut or I'm going to see if I can, you know, get a new, you know, iron and see if I can hit that better. And you see your game kind of diminish. And then you go back and you say, you know what? I'm thinking too much. I'm not having fun. I'm trying too hard. Just get back to what got you here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do that, you tend to find yourself having a little bit more of a relaxed, you know, feel at the game that you're playing. We talked about Vinny Pasquantino earlier in the year. Worried about, you know, hard hit rate. Worried about launch angle. Worried about this. How's Vinny been since May?
No, he's been great since he's not cared about that
Started
stuff.
Started having fun. Last night he was great in the locker room. He was just loose. He was joking like normal. And, you know, but also like giving the hard hit truth. Like, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, we can talk about that, you know, later on. Or we can talk about how we're playing as a team. And when you look at Jack Caglione, at least for me and my perspective last night in that locker room, he's sitting in his chair, towel over his head, kind of on his phone. You can tell that he's down bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, first at bat in the game, he gets one taken off like the kneecap or wherever it was, and you can see the frustration. Then he pops out to third, kind of had a hiccup of play in right field. And I just see that from watching baseball or watching athletes doing our job that there's pressing or there's some sort of worrisome in his mind. And I think that there just needs to be a conversation where it's like, hey, dude, we still believe in you. We might move you down to eighth in the lineup or something like that, but we need to get you back to being you. Because if I do believe you send him down to AAA, you'll see those numbers you see on the board. You'll see that 319. You'll see those home runs because that's not where he's going to learn. And I've said this 1,000 times and I'll say it 1,000 more times. Sometimes you have to be broken into 1,000,000 pieces to build yourself back up, to get yourself back to where you need to be. He's played 30 games in the Major League Baseball League at the show. And it just feels like there's something looming in his mind that needs to be cleared and just gutted out of there and get him back to Cags.
Well, there's a lot to unpack with Jack Caglione. There's a couple of ways to kind of approach this. Number one, I think everybody's now seeing how hard Major League Baseball really is from AAA to the Major League level. And when somebody's doing well in the minor leagues, it doesn't mean they're going to do well at the big league level, because it is a huge step. It is a huge jump. It is very hard to play Major League Baseball. I think it's 3% of minor leaguers ever make it to the big leagues or something ridiculous like that. So it's a very small number and a very small percentage of people. I think over the course of time, it's either 1,500 or 2,500 people or something like that, or it was a very small number of how many people actually played Major League Baseball, maybe 15,000 or something like that in the history of the game, right? Very small number of how many people have played Major League Baseball. And so the odds are stacked against you. The fact that he made it up to the big league level is, number one, awesome in and of itself. Number two, people have asked, should he be sent down? The answer is 100% no. You're not going to learn anything getting sent down to AAA unless you just need that mental break. But that mental break is coming on Sunday, okay? You've got the All-Star break. The 4 days off for a big league baseball player or any baseball player is an eternity. And so that's kind of the cleansing of the mind that I think he is going to get. Number three, this is the first time in his life that he's failed. And when you don't have success for the first time, a lot of people don't know how to handle that success. And that's the difference between being a successful big league baseball player and a guy who came up for a cup of coffee and never, you know, got there again. How do you handle failure? And I've been around this game and covering this game since 2001. And that's one of the first things I heard. How do guys handle failure? How will they handle failing at the big league level? If they're able to fail and adjust, fail and adjust, fail and adjust, they're going to be fine at the big league level. But if they fail and they don't know how to handle failure, then they're screwed and they're not going to be a successful big league baseball player. And so we'll see how Jack Caglione handles the failure, because it's something he's never had to do before. And a lot of athletes, no matter what sport it is, they get to the big league level and for their whole life, they've just been better than you, right? It doesn't matter. They're just better than you at everything because they're the best athlete on the team and all that kind of stuff. Then they get to the major leagues or the NFL or the NBA and they realize, I'm just a dude. And the quicker you can realize you're just a guy, a Jag, as we like to call him, right? The sooner or later you can realize that and learn from your failures, the better off you're going to be. And be open to that. Be willing to accept, yeah, I'm failing. This stuff's hard, man. It's hard to play at this level. And figure out ways to combat that failure. And that's how you become a big leaguer, is failing, but learning how to achieve success from failure. The big leaguers that do that stay around. The ones that don't, no, they sell insurance later in life. Jack facts.
So I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, how he's shown himself in the big leagues, it's tough, right? Like, we're human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you step on the scale sometimes, you're like, ooh, that's the number.
I try to stay off.
You step in the batter's box and you see that gigantic Crown Vision and you see, oh, 142. That's not what I've ever seen in my life.
I've heard so many players complain about that too. Right. Not just the Crown Vision, but they have complained about the Crown Vision because it is so big. But for years, even before the Crown Vision, people in baseball would say, it's hard when you look up at that scoreboard and you see 142 or 202 or something like that. That wears on you. And you look up and you see that, and human nature is, I got to erase that fast. And then you try to get five hits in one at bat. You try to hit the 5-run home run. You try to do things that you're not capable of doing because you see those numbers up there, which, if it was up to me, I wouldn't put any of those numbers up there, but that's just me. Right. But I know for a lot of baseball players, they don't want to see those numbers. It hurts their mental side of things.
And we heard about that with Moose, right?
Yeah.
And he took the bus ride north, and then that turned around quickly. But again, we've seen this, you know, all the time when it comes to, you know, guys that get that, you know, that shock. And then of course, the other thing that kind of hurts is when, you know, you're not the only one. So all these people that get mad that the Royals called up Caglione, this is the way of baseball these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
it is.
They're drafting more and more college athletes and they're calling them up early.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you look at...
What, did 2, 4, 6, and 8 get called up this year from last year's draft, right?
I know that Nick Kurtz is up, and he went 5th. Cags went 6th.
Yeah.
So there's two of them. And then Roman Anthony from Boston, he's up. And then you look at Chase Burns, he's up.
Yep.
These guys are playing. And I get it, like, Chase Burns is, you know, started off his game against the Yankees and, look, struck out the first 6 batters that he saw.
Yep.
And then Ben Rice said, hey, welcome to the league, kid. Here's a 468-foot shot.
Yeah.
And then his next start, he goes out there, he's tipping his pitches, and he's lost, and all of a sudden, you know, comes back in his next start, and he's fine. Now, pitching and hitting, two very,
completely different,
very different things. You know, you get 5 days off, and, you know, Cags gets, you know, a day off every once in a while, but...
And batting, you don't know what's coming. You know,
right. Pitching,
you're controlling the whole thing.
And the thing is... it's easier to throw a ball than it is to hit a ball. So we know that, obviously. But I think that, you know, this team is going to continue to run him out there.
And they should.
And that's exactly right. I think that if you let him, you know, if you send him down to a league in which he's probably going to go back down there and destroy, he's not going to learn anything. No. You're going to learn more in failing than you are in succeeding. And I know that sounds moronic.
No, it's true.
But I mean, you go back to the way that you've, and at least in the last 10 years in this city alone, how failure has benefited more than success. We're going to talk about the Chiefs today, about how last year's Super Bowl, bad taste in their mouth. You saw what happened when the Chiefs lost to Tom Brady in the NFC Championship game, right? Maybe we don't see the Mahomes that we see today if he doesn't deal with that failure that he had against Tom Brady in that AFC Championship game. You lose that World Series in dramatic fashion in 2014. You may not come back the next year spitting fire and kicking tires and going through the whole year and then all of a sudden winning that World Series that you did in 2015. So this is something that is a learning curve for Caglione. And yes, I understand that if it gets very putrid and bad, if he's hitting below 100 and gets to like 0.89, you have no other option. But you have a benefit of letting him deal with this, take the All-Star break off, come back. And again, if everybody's feeling this vibe and they start playing this way, that will also make things easier. And you know where his locker is? Right next to Vinny Pasquantino's.
Yeah, it's where it
should
be,
not a better
be, right?
spot in that place to be. When you're down and you got this guy goofing around and being the mouthpiece, just sit back, relax, and know that you're here and know that you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and that's the other thing he has to understand, too. They're not going to send him down anytime soon. Now, you're right, if he gets below 100, I should never say they're never going to send anybody down. But this is the best thing that could have ever happened to Jack Caglione. Come up here and get your you-know-what kicked in and figure it out. And that's what you have to do sometimes. Like, it's like being a parent and whatnot. You say, all right, eventually you're going to have to learn from your mistakes. I mean, we're going through that now with my daughter who ran into a curb, blew out a tire. Sorry, you can't drive until you pay us the money back for that tire because you drove into that.
But that's gonna make her a better driver. That's gonna make her budget better. That's gonna make her work harder.
You would hope. Yeah. That's the goal, Dusty. Yeah. Let's see if it happens, right?
Because, I learned that at 35.
Yeah. But we figured, look, you busted this tire. You drove into the curb because you were mad. And so now you've got to face the responsibility of paying for that tire. And when you come up with the $400 and whatnot or whatever it was, and you pay us back, then you can have your car back. And I'm like, hopefully that is something that, like, you've learned your lesson at 15, right? You've learned your lesson now. And hopefully this is one of those moments that carries you through your entire life. And you're now very careful with the car. You understand you're not supposed to do that kind of stuff. You learn from those failures. Like yesterday, she's like, well, I guess I'm walking to Walgreens. I go, I guess you are. See you later. You know, those shoes aren't proper, but whatever. Go ahead and walk to Walgreens. Of course, we had to go pick them up. But anyway, but you hope they learn. And that's what you hope with Jack Caglione right now. You hope all of this failure right now is teaching him a lesson of what to do so he doesn't experience failure again. And if he doesn't come out of failure, then he's not a Major League Baseball player.
And I do believe once it clicks, it will click. By the way, the Royals have played 7 games in July and they've scored 33 runs. It's a 4.7 average per game. So they just had to get June out of there and fail in June to succeed in July.
That's exactly right.
So there's a manager's list of managers fired. Because for some reason, that's what we like to see. Yeah. I don't know why. The leader
you can bet on it. You know?
Yeah, true. The Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, 3-1. Mark Kotze, 7-2. Matt Cotrero on the list.
Flying up the list.
4-1. Stephen Voigt, 9-2. ALCS representative last year. Alex Cora, the Red Sox, on that list as well. A bunch of others, too. The one name that I think is on the list that's the best betting odds, 25-1 for one Aaron Boone.
I don't hate that.
They are 3.5 games out of first place behind the Blue Jays. Yep. The Blue Jays just whipped their ass
Yeah.
There was a good game. I believe it was like Wednesday or so. It was a day game. It was like Canada Day when Toronto wore all the red. Yeah. And it was like one of these, like, am I watching baseball? It was 8-0. Then it was 8-8. Then it was 9-8. And Judge hitting a home run. And George Springer, who's still relevant in Toronto, hit 2 home runs. Had like 7 RBI. And you're like, okay, but it's the Yankees, man. And they're 3.5 games out of first place.
Yep.
They were the world's team at the beginning of the year.
Oh, yeah, they were.
And they had a team meeting. Didn't work. And 25-1, you know more than we do here in the show with Mac and I, that when it ain't going well in New York, 3.5 feels like 9.5, and then 9.5 turns into 10.5, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, Boone ain't coming back.
Yeah, but that's, you know, they haven't really done that since Steinbrenner died, you know?
That's
fair. Like we all live in, like, the George Steinbrenner days of the 70s where Billy Martin was fired 5 times and hired 5 times, and I think Lou Piniella had 3 tenures as Yankee manager and whatnot. So they've kind of changed their ways a little bit, but, you know, we were talking about this before the show, about these managers getting fired in baseball and the Washington guy got fired along with the GM yesterday. And, you know,
Sunday.
And then I said about Stephen Vogt or whatever, we were talking about him. You're like, God, Stephen Vogt's on that list. And he's at what? 9-2.
Yeah.
Right behind Q to be Athletics manager fired.
Finalists for AL Manager of the Year last year.
Yeah, it just goes to show you what a difference a year makes for a lot of people. But
NBA?
Yeah, exactly. But from a betting standpoint, like, I wouldn't put any money on Q to get fired. Like,
not getting fired.
The best odds for me are probably Rocco Baldelli. I've been saying that guy was going to get fired since March, and it hasn't happened yet. It's 7-1. Or Aaron Boone at 25-1. I think it's one of those two guys. I don't think Stephen Vogt's going to get fired. Because you and I were talking before the show, I go, is it his fault or is this a front office deal for them? Because, you know, they've let a lot of guys go. They haven't really replenished their roster all that much. And they're sitting here, fourth place now or whatever it is in the Central Division. Is that Stephen Vogt's fault or is that the way management was running the team and set him up for failure? You know, a lot of times management sets you up for failure.
Also their window. They're in fourth place behind the Twins. They're 41-48. That's a disappointment.
Yeah.
What would you say to Q then? Because management's done well. They've done what needed for him.
Yeah,
so what would you say about that?
I just don't think the players are playing.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I don't think this is anything to do with Matt Cotrero. I just think baseball managers are overvalued at times. You know, they make a difference in about 10 games per year. I don't think the manager has that much of an impact on once the game starts, you got to go out there and execute. I mean, he's not holding the bat for Bobby.
I think you think that about sports in general, which is fine. You think that about basketball coaches. You think you can coach a football team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think an NFL coach. An observation.
Yeah, no, I think an NFL coach has more impact on a game than anything else because you're calling every freaking play.
Yeah.
It's your job. You are legitimately putting those players in position to go out there, and now obviously they have to execute and whatnot, but you're literally calling every single play. Yeah. Bobby goes up to the bat, and, you know, Q could go take a leak or whatever, you know, miss the at bat and that, you know, not be involved, right? And something could happen, right? And that's no shot at any, but that's just the difference between football and obviously basketball players. They don't listen. So you've seen the huddles, everybody's staring at the sky or whatever. You know, coaches are dime a dozen in that league. But in the NFL, you really do have an impact on your team. You have an impact on a lot of things that other coaches in other sports just don't have an impact on.
Speaking of an NFL impact, and would you rather, or would Q rather, would you rather see Chris Jones lead the NFL in sacks, or would you rather see Xavier Worthy lead the NFL in receiving touchdowns?
Chris Jones is 20-1 to lead the league in sacks this year. Way down the list. I'm going to take the Chris Jones angle on this one.
Bet he leads in pressures.
heck yeah.
Get to the quarterback and sack him. But I think it means more for the team standpoint if Chris Jones leads the league in sacks than it does if Worthy leads the league in receiving touchdowns, because that means something else. I don't expect anybody to be amongst the leaders in touchdowns this year for the Chiefs because they have so many weapons. And Patrick Mahomes said yesterday or the day before with Kay Adams, it was all about fun this year. So fun to me means distribution of the football all over the joint. I don't think we're going to see a lot of players, huge numbers touchdown wise. But I think we're going to see a lot of guys with 5, 6, or 7 touchdowns. And so I think Chris Jones leading the league in sacks, to me, has a bigger impact for the success of this team than Xavier Worthy leading the team in receiving touchdowns, or leading the league in receiving touchdowns. Where are you guys at?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if Xavier's leading in touchdowns, that means, okay, is there an injury? Something's wrong. What makes this Chiefs offense so great for this whole era has been the diversity, right? You never know where the ball is going to go. They can do anything at any point, and that's what we've talked about this whole year, right? The depth that this wide receiver room. I don't want one guy getting every touchdown.
No.
That's not good enough. Yeah, Chris Jones, let's go.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I think it would be impressive if Xavier Worthy led this team in touchdowns.
No doubt.
With Rice and Kelsey and Hollywood Brown and Juju, guys like that, Noah Gray, guys like that are touchdown magnets. I think that'd be interesting to see, like, if Xavier Worthy did do that, be like, how many of those were the little 5-yard flick outs from, it's like, you know, inside the 10 that he just, you know, squirts inside the middle and scores. But Jones is that'd be nuts, dude.
Be amazing. He'd
finally get a DPOY.
Yeah.
Better.
And then, you know,
that gets it done, right? He gets defensive player of the year if he leads the league in sacks, right?
I mean, that's normally who wins it.
Or somebody has, you know, like out in Colorado, some defensive back has like 10 interceptions and 4 touchdowns or something like that. I guess Sertan goes like wild, something like that, obviously.
Of course, that would happen to Chris.
Yeah, of course.
That would happen to Jones.
They would find a way not to give it to Chris Jones. You
Justin
know?
Houston would call Chris Jones and go, welcome to the club, dog. I had that damn J.J. Watt guy for my entire career. Yeah. I had 20 sack season.
Yeah.
Just didn't win it. You know? Like, damn it, dude. So many times. Like, all right, Justin Houston, 21 and a half sacks, whatever it was that year.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, great season. J.J. Watt.
Better.
22 to have sacks, six defensive touchdowns. Son of a gun.
I can't get out of my own way on this one.
Clark, just give him a check, man. He deserved it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It is a Tuesday. It's great for two people in this room, but it's always tough and could be a tough Tuesday or a hot corner Tuesday. We'll do that on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
Whoever that bozo was doing the armpit fart thing, come on, man.
Catch Royals insider Josh Fournier every Monday at 8:20 right here on your home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.
Tuesday on Fesco and Dusty, Mac Morey, Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens, all with you here on 96.5 The Fan. That's Mac on the drums.
You know it, bro. That double kick, that's me.
You know, I know we're getting ready to do the Hot Corner Tuesday, which will turn into tough Tuesdays in the football season. Stephon Diggs, eesh. Sorry, buddy.
That was a quick relationship, wasn't it?
Who saw that coming?
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. I didn't see it this fast, yeah, it but fast. I mean, like a month, did it even make it past, like, what's in the bag? What's in the bag?
She dropped him like a bad habit, man.
She really did. She dropped him like he drops footballs.
That's Cardi, cuz.
Well, and she just had like a song and stuff that came out about like, I date your favorite player or whatever to offset. So I was like, okay, they're going to stay together. Well, she's like writing lyrics about him and then see ya.
Yep.
How do we know it was about him?
It's fair. It's fair. It's very fair.
Thank you.
Well, and that thing's been, you know.
It's been in the hopper for a while, right?
They've had that, like, almost unhealthy relationship, those two, Offset and Cardi B, like, nonstop.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Very toxic.
I mean, yeah, that's like watching your neighbor's disaster of a marriage going on, right? There's something like, every night.
Get out. I never understood why when people are in, like, serious relationships, why when they, like, just delete everything on socials because, you know, out of mind, out of place, you don't see it, you don't have to feel it.
Wipe it clean.
Definitely those two follow each other on every single social, 100%. Tapping it on each other. Like, oh, what's he doing? Oh, that's my move.
Yeah. There's no chance that they unfollowed each other or, you know.
They probably still text sometimes.
I mean, she put his names on her nails and then and then kicked him to the curb. They went and got Rolexes together and then see ya.
I mean, that relationship literally didn't even last the summer. Like, it didn't even last the spring.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Mike Vrabel stepped in.
Probably. Yeah. Vrabel's like, oh, we ain't doing this. We're done with that. We're done. You thought Bill Belichick was, you know, exactly. Getting after it with this guy. I'm taking the Belichick approach here. This is not happening.
All right, Mac, your name is on the top of the list of a Hot Corner Tuesday.
Hot Corner.
So go ahead and lead us off.
Well, I'd say Crisscross Applesauce had a tough day on the internet, but for me, I'm going to go with Ace Bailey.
Who?
Ace Bailey, I know.
Sorry, you speak my other ear? I feel like you call me Ace.
What did you say? So Ace Custis?
This was the guy, Bob, I'll remind you, who wouldn't work out with any NBA team. Remember, he's like, I don't want to work out with this team. I don't want to work with that team.
Oh, he was the one who didn't want to be a Jazz and is now a Jazz?
Yes, yeah. And Danny Ainge was like,
is he a Jazz or a Jag?
What do you say? He's a Jag, just another guy. But, like, what is it? Are you a Jazz? Are you a Heat? Like, these singular names. That, like, are you a Magic?
Is he upset that Colin Cowherd got drafted before he did?
Absolutely should be.
But he went up against VJ Edgecombe, another, you know.
Out of Baylor, baby.
Heard of him.
Yep. To the Philadelphia 76ers.
Baller, dude.
He was the third overall pick, Ace Bailey fifth. They played each other in summer league. Edgecombe with 28 points, 10 rebounds. Ace Bailey, 8 points, 3 for 13, 1 assist.
Yeah. Summer league over the last couple of years has become such a moneymaker for this league. And our old boss, John Hansen, used to cover Summer League in Las Vegas in the early 2000s. He goes, it was the greatest thing ever. Nobody was there. I hung out with all the players, all the coaches. Yeah. They were happy to see us. Everybody was in Vegas, made great relationships. When all these people were young now, they've got them in big arenas, and we've changed the whole game of the NBA Summer League because they realized they could probably make a dollar or two off of this thing.
Yeah,
it used to be like an intimate experience. Media got to go see these new players, build relationships. That is not the way.
You played at like noon at Thomas and Mack Center if you were lucky, and then you were at the casinos, you know, a couple hours later enjoying yourself.
Summer league in high school was always fun too. Like you just had pickup games against other high school kids that played at other high schools. You'd be like, "Yo, we're gonna play at least some of North's gym's open. All right, we'll meet you up there." and like one of your assistant coaches would be there and they wanted to see what kids were taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. And then it was also like, oh, this is actually kind of fun.
Right.
We can play inside. We can just hoop. All right.
At yeah. that age in high school, you think voluntary really is voluntary. And then yeah. you realize real fast, voluntary is not voluntary. No, it is mandatory.
Notes. Yeah, they're taking notes.
Yeah, like, I tried to tell my daughter that about like, kick arounds for soccer. I'm like, these are not voluntary. Yeah. These are mandatory.
Yeah.
Blue Springs, we always went to Missouri camp and all the people that wanted to play basketball went you to Missouri went. Camp. And yeah. we stayed in the dorm room for a summer and we'd play like, you know, all the teams in the area, whether it was O'Hara, whether it was Oak Park, whether it was, you know, Shawnee, whoever went down there and you played a round robin tournament. And at the very end, you got to play on the Hearn Center floor. Cool. It was fun. And yeah. Quinn Snyder spoke and he spoke really fast and was sweaty. And I didn't understand at the time. And then I got older. And I was like, now I understand. But Quinn Snyder was a
He'll
G,
always
dude.
Be one of my favorites. And for a KU person to say that, like, he will always be one of my favorites.
You're up next.
I am? Oh, yeah. The American League Central is on the hot corner right now. Only Detroit is over 500 in this division right now. Mm-hmm. And a few months ago, boy, we thought this was going to be a really good division. Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, all going to make the playoffs this year, right? We may get four teams into the playoffs. Look at the Twins and everything. And now this division has dissipated as much as the rain from overnight. And so it seems more old school AL Central, where there was one good team and everybody else was no good, than it does what we thought at the beginning of the year. So hot seat, hot corner has to be for me, the American League Central right now. This division stinks.
Mine goes to Bob's guy.
You could suggest Mahomes is losing his grip. Is he still better than Lamar Jackson? In my opinion, yes. He's still better than Josh Allen? In my opinion, yes. But you could suggest he's losing his grip. Just like, how do y'all, it irks me only because how can y'all say it's not close? Like, Mahomes doesn't beat Josh or Lamar 40-7 in these games.
Who cares?
When he beats them in the playoffs. Obviously, Mahomes never loses to those individuals. He is better.
He just doesn't beat him.
That's all. I don't see how you even take it. But to suggest it's not close, like, yes, Shady Marshawn might have you in some care areas. You might have him in some areas. Adrian Peterson might have y'all both in some areas. But I would never just sit here and say, to say it's not close, well, they have MVPs.
Yeah, the like, thing is,
it's not close.
The thing is, right?
And not fair to suggest, if Josh Allen had more, if he had more resources, because don't forget, Patrick Mahomes walked into a first ballot Hall of Famer in Tyreek Hill, a first ballot Hall of Famer in Travis Kelce, and the best coach in the history of the NFL.
But they didn't.
Is it not fair to suggest if Josh had, for Josh
the thing,
at least,
though.
To think,
no, here's
if
the thing,
I had
though.
More. If you put Josh Allen
to this anymore. It's
on the Chiefs
awful rhetoric.
During his tenure, and you put Mahomes on the Bills in the same tenure, I believe Josh Allen would have two Super Bowls. He might not have three. I believe he'd have two.
So that's Emmanuel Acho out here just spitting hot takes on, you know, his show. Look.
Have you ever heard anybody argue with themselves both sides like that?
I mean, losing his grip and didn't have resources. Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl with Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, and MVS.
Mecole Hardman.
Never heard of him.
I mean, yeah, I get it. Like, the talent in the NFL now is a lot closer than it was than when Mahomes came in, 8 years ago? But to say that he's lost his grip, he just went to the Super Bowl again.
He went to three straight Super Bowls.
Yeah, he didn't throw over 4,000 yards, but his top two wide receiving options were out.
Yeah.
He lost Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice by week 3.
Yeah. I mean, Hollywood he didn't even have, you know.
How many wins did they win last year?
15-2.
Okay. Okay. Did he play in that one loss?
He did.
Oh, no.
No, not the one game they lost. No, yeah.
I don't know who hurt Emmanuel Acho.
I mean, he just has bad opinions, bad takes, and is not, like, he's just not right. It's all wrong. It's all, like, well, he's winning all these games, but he's not winning 40-7. When did that matter, Emmanuel?
Like, what are you even saying? What's
well, that's the thing. Yeah. What are you even
What's
saying?
What's the take?
Yeah.
That he's better, but he's not that much better.
Okay. Doesn't matter. You just have to be better.
Also, he probably is that much better, but it's okay.
Yeah, he really is. did he luck out with Andy Reid? No doubt. But did Andy Reid luck out with him? Yeah. Yeah, they both lucked out together on this one, right? And Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill were really good. Patrick Mahomes made him better.
Yeah, it's a good thing Tom Brady, you know, fell into Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if Peyton Manning would have fell into Bill Belichick, I mean, we'd be talking about, you know what? You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. it's just so stupid. I mean, it really is. Like, Emmanuel Acho is arguably, if you're doing a Mount Rushmore of the worst in sports media, he's the George Washington on the Mount Rushmore. And I don't even know
like the one the kids do in the pool?
Yeah. He is number one on the like awful sport. Like Emmanuel Acho, among others, but Emmanuel Acho from a national standpoint is what gives sports talk a bad name. Because people hear stuff like that and they think it's just guys bloviating, it's blowhards with bad takes and things of that nature. Is there a lot of it? Yeah, we saw some of it yesterday, heard some of it yesterday, right? There was a lot of bloviating yesterday that was ignorant. And Emmanuel Acho leads the pack. And if I'm doing my Mount Rushmore of terrible sports radio, sports talk, you know, hosts, Emmanuel Acho is the George Washington on that list because nothing he says is even relevant or worthy of anybody even debating with him. He's debating with himself about this kind yes. of stuff. It's just awful. I don't know who else is on my list, but he's definitely the George Washington.
From the 913 is Dusty from St. Louis. The amount you talk about your glory days from high school, you think?
Oh, my gosh.
Boom. Roasted.
That is a beautiful text. You get July.
He's laughing a little too hard at that.
He liked that a little
too hard. Really good. I liked it. It was funny.
Thanks for the text, Jen. Coming up on the other side, for better or for worse, I'm not talking marriage. I'm talking Royals here at 96.5 The Fan. You're home for Kansas City sports.
I just want to win, Jen.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
Hey, what you up, man?
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.